Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to TorahMediaAtlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.
Okay, we're in Yeshaya chapter 10. Each Nevuah is a little different, but we're talking about the upcoming events. The upcoming event was going to be the destruction of most of the country of Yehuda by Sanherib. There were two parts to this event. We today mostly talk about the celebration that he had a siege to Yerushalayim, and on Pesach night they went to sleep, and there was a plague in their army, and they were destroyed. It was an unbelievable miracle. And Chizkiyahu, who was the righteous king at that time, held on, and they didn't give up to Sancheiriv, and we know about the miracle. But most of Eretz Yisrael was laid desolate at that time. The countryside and the other cities were destroyed, and there was a reason that Hashem brought him against us. There was a reason that Hashem brought him against us, and so now we're going to go through we've had times where the problem is the monarch, but the people were good, and then we've had times where the problem is the people, but the monarch is good. And the monarch, if the king is only as good as the people, if the people have sinned, then Hashem wants them to do teshuva and wants them to be worthy of being in Eretz Yisrael. So Yeshayahu gives a warning to the people for those types of sins that is going to bring on this calamity. And he says the following. And there are many of these. What he wants to talk about, the shortcomings of the people, he uses the word hoy, which is similar to oy. They translate it as woe. It's like, how could it be? Like, it's a wonder. It almost makes like it's hard to imagine. There are certain sins that are, you know, every person, there's a pasuk that says that there's no such thing as a human being that doesn't sin. But there are sins, and then there are heavy-duty sins. And there are certain types of sins that bring Hashem's wrath. And over here, he talks about those sins. What's striking here is these are monetary sins. In our generation, it would be rare to see somebody like strike a widow, you know, or not do justice to an orphan. But on the other hand, there are people that take advantage of other people monetarily, whether they sell them insurance products that they know aren't good for them, whether they give them bad advice, whether there's different types of something like what Madoff did, you know, where he sold people things that they weren't going to. But these types of sins, unfortunately, are more common. People tend to separate their business side from their religious side. And we all know that when Hashem gave the Torah, he had two tablets, that you can't separate the business side from the religious side. In other words, the same way that you serve Hashem when you put on tefillin and you keep the Shabbos, you serve Hashem in being honest in your business dealings and not taking advantage of people and not. Sometimes it's hard for people. They separate the two. Well, doesn't everybody do this? You know, everybody sells defective product, or everybody sells something that takes advantage, and they sell used cars that don't, you know, you get them off the lot and then they don't work or whatever it is, right? That's the. So he says over here, Hoya Chokakim Chakike Oven. When a person makes a contract, they are, especially in those days, they didn't really have ink. They had to scratch it in. So woe to people that would scratch in. They would make up contracts to take advantage of the poor and the umiktavim amol katevu. They would write deeds of things that were to take advantage of people. Whether they... Lahatos, what would these contracts do? Verse 2, Lahatos midin dalin. These would take advantage of the poor. Ligzol mishpat aniye ami, and to steal from the poor of my people. Often people, even in this country, the wealthy people can have lawyers, and so they can fight if somebody takes advantage of them. Whereas sometimes the people that are poor, they can't. Somebody takes advantage and says, "Well, that's what it says in the contract, or that's what we decided we're going to do." They have no one to defend them, and so the orphan and the widow, they had no one to stick up for them, and so this person takes advantage of the poor and and they look at those people like they are easy. Today we would call it like taking candy from a baby, or it's more common with seniors that people rely on they take advantage of older people who tend to be more trusting, in those days, people would take advantage of orphans and widows because they didn't have the family protection that most people would have. So this brings Hashem's anger. People that take advantage of those that have no one to stick up for them. So what's interesting is in verse 3 we have the word. This word became famous simply because they were looking for a word for Holocaust and they couldn't find one, and so they chose the word Shoya. But it doesn't. It's not a perfect fit. Doesn't necessarily mean a Holocaust. But it was. They were looking for a cute word or something. You know, it's hard to know how they picked out these words in modern Hebrew. But the word they chose is the word that's used over here. That umatasa liyam pekuda. Now, when society has been corrupted, the flood came because that society was corrupted. Sodom and Amorah were destroyed because the society was corrupted. In other words, people took advantage of others. So too, he was saying that our society was becoming corrupted, and there would come a Shoya, a Holocaust. But it doesn't really mean, you'll see here, none of the translations call it a Holocaust, because they were translated before the Holocaust existed. That wasn't the... my one calls it just for the day of destruction. Does yours have similar words?
Retribution.
Retribution, that's a good word.
Day of reckoning.
Reckoning, that's a good word. Yeah,
although that comes later. Yeah.
So, in other words, the enemy will come to... the problem with using the Holocaust, that implies that we did something wrong and then Hashem brought the Holocaust to punish us. It's not clear. It could be that there are those that feel that Hashem wanted to punish the European Jewry, and there's certainly a possibility, but nobody's a prophet. We wouldn't say that on our... we don't have the prophecy right to say that we know why Hashem brings tragedies to the world. But this particular usage is a destruction brought about because of our actions. So actually to call it a Shoya implies that we deserved it. Maybe we did. It's just the people who chose the word didn't intend that for it to mean that. They just intended to mean that it was a big destruction. And it doesn't even really imply like how many, you know, a third of our people, a lot of our people. It doesn't really... unfortunately, the modern Hebrew, when they looked for words, sometimes they were on the mark and sometimes they weren't, meaning that they picked words to use for modern terms, and sometimes the words they picked were very good and sometimes they weren't. You know, it's like any language, or they were trying to find a word. Rashi says the word Shoya here just means destruction. Maybe they won't like Rashi. But at any rate, when Merkut Tavah Al Mit Tenusa, who are we going to go to for help? For Amitazu Kavodim, and when people have to run away, they leave all their wealth behind. Who are you going to leave your wealth to? Verse 4, Dilti Kara Tachas Asir. The people will be like carried away as a prisoner. In other words, he will be carried away to places that he had never been. He will bow down. He'll have to work in places that he didn't work before. It sounds like the Holocaust a little bit. There were people that were sent off to work camps, to work in other places. The people were taken captive and sent to work in different places. The tachas arugim yipol, and sometimes people hid underneath those that were killed. That was one way that a large percentage of the people that survived were survived because people left them for dead. And so this is describing the initial campaign that Sancheriv would make against Eretz Yisrael. So did that satisfy Hashem's anger? Did we do teshuva? No, because those lo shavapo. Even when this happens, Hashem's anger will not desist. And his hand is still stretched out. So again, when Hashem sends us a sign of his anger, it's our job to come back. We had before as well that there was a lot of infighting at that time. It says Ephraim was fighting with Manasseh, you know, one brother with his other brother. And again, there's certain things that really get Hashem angry. Now we get to another hoy. Interesting thing is that Hashem uses these conquerors to punish us. And sometimes they are really just instruments in the hand of Hashem. It's not that they're better than we are. The Nazis were a good example of that, actually, because after they harmed us, they were wiped out. Basically, they were destroyed. And so Hashem gave them the power to harm us, and then they lost their power. Their thousand-year right just fell apart. Usher was like that. In other words, Usher came against us, and then right at the gate to Yerushalayim, he was wiped out. So Hoy Usher Shevet Apo, he is the stick of my anger. It's not that he's a good person and that we should say, well, he behaved better than us and that's why he's on top and we're on the bottom. No, he's the stick. He's the thing nearby that Hashem is using to vent his anger. Umatu biyadam zami, and his hand is the fury of Hashem's hand. Now, why will Sancheiriv be sent? B'goy chanef ashochanu, to a hypocritical nation I will send them. We haven't really developed what Hanifa is. Hanifa usually is described as like flattery or hypocrisy. It's a, like a phoniness. When people act one way and then in the other way, sometimes when a person pretends to be observant in one hand, but he doesn't keep the other hand, doesn't treat his workers right, doesn't steals from widows and orphans, so he's trying to be on Hashem's good side. You know, he attends synagogue, but then on the other hand, he doesn't do things the right way. Also, if you chanifa, like flattery, means like a person can use flattery to get what he's not really deserving with. So he describes the Jewish people as begoy chanif. I will send Sancheriv to punish the nation of the hypocrisy. Balam varti, and against the this people at Savannah Lishlo Shlal, he's going to take away the booty. We'll love his buzz. The people had taken advantage of the poor and the downtrodden, and Hashem says, now I'm going to send an enemy who's going to take away all that they have. He's going to take the booty. He's going to take away the plunder. And all this wealth, what's going to become of it? It's going to be like the mud in the streets. It's going to be stepped on. All that wealth isn't going to help them when Hashem sends Sancheriv against them. Verse 7. V'hu lo kein yidma. The only problem is that Sancheriv himself, he doesn't realize that he's working for Hashem and that he's punishing us because we misbehaved. Ulevavo lo kein. In his heart, he doesn't realize that. Now, what happens is that Hashem uses him to punish us, and then Hashem punishes him. The power that he has, instead of being grateful to Hashem for it, he somehow thinks that he deserves it. So Hashem says that in his heart, he doesn't realize, he thinks it's his own strength. He's destroyed many nations Sancheirib had destroyed all the nations in the Middle East. There are many nations over there. He had gone from one to another. The other thing that he did that was interesting was he had a policy of relocating the people from one country to the next. Because usually when people wage a campaign, they just fight against the people and then they leave tax collectors. He removed the people from one country and shipped them to another, and shipped in people from another country to that place. And there were many ramifications to this, because we have rules, for example, that certain nations are not allowed to convert to Judaism. And certain nations have to wait three generations, like an Egyptian or... what happened, though, is that he mixed up the whole Middle East, so that we no longer know who's an Egyptian, who's a Moabite, who's a Amaleki. It all became mixed up. And so none of the ancient rules about this nation applied anymore. He put the Samaritans in the land of Israel. Those were an African nation. He stirred the pot, so to speak. So why was it that he felt that he could attack Yerushalayim? Verse 8. He said that he felt that he was the greatest, he was the most powerful. He didn't recognize that it came from Hashem. He didn't recognize that this was Hashem's will. He said, Kiyoma halo sara yakta malachim. He said, well, my officers are like kings. He said, I got the best team. My generals are the best. The reason why I'm defeating all this is because no one can compare to me. My officers, halo sara yakta, my army is like kings. Halo kakarmish kulanu. And what he wants to say is these are ancient cities that he conquered. Imlo ka'arpad hamas, imlo kadamasak shomram. All these other kingdoms he defeated, one after another. So why shouldn't he defeat Yehuda? Kasher matza yadala malachos alo, just like he could conquer these pagan nations, he was saying he felt that he could conquer Yerushalayim. He didn't want to recognize that the country of Hashem was different. Now, there's a funny statement here in verse 10. Upisilehem Yerushalayim Mishomron. He said that the gods of the nations that he defeated came from Yerushalayim and from Shomron. It said, made in Israel. So, one of the commentators said that there were Jews that made idols and sold them. Jews are always businessmen. Mm-hmm. I know with some of the kosher people that, so I know one that sells wine to the Catholic Church, you know, they use it for sacrament. They like the heavy, you know, the Manischewitz wine, or the, to a Catholic Church, you know, in other words, I know a business that sells it to them.
Is it kosher?
Yeah, but there's nothing, I don't think there's anything wrong in it, although you didn't ask me the question whether it's, I don't know whether you're allowed to say I won't sell to you, or I do or I don't, but, and it's, Jews are, have always been in the jewelry business and the trinket business, and they sell non-other religions stuff as well. There are people that have told me that they've been near the Vatican sightseeing, and they've run into, like, Jewish businessmen selling trinkets, you know, it's just in that line, or that, you know, the, there are Jews who were selling. The Sancheirib said, well, I already defeated the gods that were made in Israel and Shomron. There's another idea, which is that when Jews sometimes become, they enter the Gentile world, they excel in it. And so they, there were Jews who were heading up these other religions that he defeated. Right, he said, "Pusilei Mishalai Mishoma." There were Jews who were the heads of that. But it doesn't say. It just says specifically the idols were made from Yerushalayim and Shomron. So he said he assumed he could defeat it. Verse 11. Hello, Kasher Asisu LeShomron. Well, not only that, he defeated the other Jewish kingdom. And if he could defeat the other Jewish kingdom and the gods that they had at this point, the 10 tribes were worshiping idols. So, Cain Esed Yerushalayim, lots of us. So, why should Yerushalayim be any different? The only thing is that Hashem expects the idol worshippers to differentiate between the worship of stones and with human sacrifice and all the horrible things that were involved in idol worship, when you person saw that, they could feel that they could be more powerful. But when they saw Hashem himself and the monarchy of David and the Torah of Yerushalayim, to think that he would be able to conquer that was wrong. Paro had a similar line, by the way. When Moshe Rabbeinu came to him, he said, who is Hashem? Like he didn't recognize. He refused to see that Hashem was any different than every nation had its idol. And so he just wanted to see Hashem in the same light. And so that's the way Sancheirav saw Yerushalayim. So verse 12, V'hayi ki yitza Hashem es kol ma'aseyo b'harsin Yerushalayim. As soon as he finishes his retribution against his people, he uses the stick of Sancheirav to punish us. So then Efkad al pri godol levav melech Asher. Then he's going to get his. He's going to throw away the stick or break the stick. So Hashem was going to use the king of Asher, who was, he doesn't even call him by name over here, he's going to use the king of Asher to punish us, but as soon as he's finished, as soon as we've taken our punishment, so to speak, and we've done teshuvah, then Hashem is going to punish the punisher. And that's why is he going to punish Asher, the king of Assyria? Because he was so arrogant. Valtiferis rum enav. And so haughty, and he's boasting, and he thought his generals were the best, and he was the best. He just assumed Hashem was just one of the other gods. Unfortunately, there are people, even sometimes you see it amongst Jewish people, who compare Judaism to other religions. And they say, well, they're all the same, and they're all, you know, just be a good person. They all say the same thing. They have a different name for Hashem. And you know what? They're the same as this. You know, they're like Sancheirav. The Jews are just another idol. Some do a little better job. Some do a worse job. But, you know, I see that constantly. This country likes, you know, Christians like to see themselves as the ones that inherited the Judaic Christian tradition, and so they like to see themselves as another model of one of the Judaic religions. They have the Jewish ethics and the when a person compares Judaism to other religions, he's making a big mistake. It's a certain form of blasphemy. I don't blame people. In other words, people, they live in a multicultural society, especially Reformed and Conservative, and they see, well, I go once a week to my temple, he goes once a week to his temple. Or I go once a year, he goes once a year, and I have I have my Hanukkah bush and he has his tree, and we do, you know, we do the same, we all have our little customs and they're all very similar, and we're good neighbors. But the problem is that a person is being very superficial. It's like saying the truth doesn't exist, and everybody's the same, and they're not the same. They're not the same by any means of the imagination. But that was what Sancheirav thought, and therefore he was going to be punished. And not only that, he didn't see his success as coming from Hashem. He felt that he himself was in his wisdom. As we continue on, verse 13, Kalmar. Because he said, "B'koyach yadi, you know what? I did all this by myself. U'b'chachmasi, I'm the smartest guy alive. Ki nevunasi, v'asir gulus amim. I had this brilliant strategy of moving the people around. V'asir oseim shoshai, and I plundered. V'orid ka'abir yoshvim, and I lowered the people down." Now it's interesting. One of the Mefarshim say that Hashem was about to send the Jewish people into exile. And when you go into a country where people have been living a long time, they don't like foreigners. So Hashem wanted to make the blow softer, so that when we would go into exile, the people who were there wouldn't have deep roots there, and they wouldn't be able to look at us as strangers, because they hadn't been there that long either. They also were foreigners. One of the ways today where I think the Jews thrive is because America has become such a so multicultured that it used to, when we grew up, it was like my father came over on the Mayflower, right? You know, today the white Protestants are the minority in the country. Most of the people are Spanish or colored or this. So why are Jews any different? You know, we also are new to the country. We didn't come over on the Mayflower. That was why Sancheirav did this, according to many, was the kindness of Hashem. But that's what he did. That was very interesting. I don't know if you have Stalin did that a little bit. he took people out of one country and moved into another. You know, he did the he moved some of the peoples around from where they were. In other words, he sent them into exile. The Russians were pretty much famous for doing that. They when there was a war going on, they made the Jews move, you know, away from the line, you know, from the, because they felt that they would be a fifth column. But anyway, that's what he did. 14. V'timsukakan yadu l'chel amin. And he like attracted himself. He became the nest for the wealth of all the nations. And he felt like he was picking up all the abandoned eggs, kolorot. Ani asafti, in other words, he felt that the wealth of the world was for him to gather. That was his purpose. He was out there to get the booty. And he did what he wanted to, and nobody could flap their wings, and nobody chirped. It implies like, you know, he got away with it all. No, there was no... There was nobody stopped him. The big empires, one after another, he did this. Hayispor Hagarza. Now this is Hashem talking. Would the axe handle be? Would he brag alachotzeslo? Because of the is he bragging on the one who made him? Im yisgado hamisha amenifo. If a person is does a person brag when he's just a tool? Does he think that nobody picks up the stick? In other words, doesn't he realize that the power behind his armies is the hand of Hashem? So Hashem is very angry. Now again, here he's talking about Sancheirav. So what is Hashem going to do? Verse 16. So Hashem is saying he's going to punish those officers that he talked about, the fat ones, Rosam Itakav Kavoda Yikar, and in place of all the glory and honor that they have, they'll be fire. Yikad ki yikadesh. The country, the army of Sancheirav will be like burnt. Verse 17, Vahaya or Yisrael Aish, and they'll be burnt by the Jewish people, and the holy ones of Israel will be the ones to do it. And it'll happen in one day. Most of the time takes a long time to defeat an army like that. The army of Sancheirav was wiped out in a day. 18. And the glory of his forests and his trees and his the property that he had, the souls that he had, the flesh that he had, yikala, it'll all be destroyed. Vayu kamos gnosis. And everything that he has will be like something that you step on. It'll be like ground up. It'll all be ground up. It'll be pulverized. Like he had all this wealth and pageantry and glory, and it would be like trampled on when there'd be a plague, and it would be like verse 19. Ushar eitz yaro, and whatever's left, the remaining trees. There'll be few. Misri Yivanar, you cut them. And anybody could cut them off, any young person can come and take them over. So that's what would happen to Sancheirav. Now, what's going to happen to the Jewish people? So, we have the Jewish people sinning and Hashem bringing a punishment. We have the stick of the punishment being arrogant and Hashem punishing him. Now, what will happen when the Jewish people see that he's punished? Verse 20. V'hayu b'yomahu l'yosef od shar Yisrael. And the people will no longer look to the Gentiles. They won't lean on him. Whoever is left, l'hishan al-makeu. They won't lean on the one that hits them. They won't follow the power that's destroying them. Instead, v'nishan al-Hashem kodesh Yisrael be'emes. It'll teach people who their real friends are, and the people will rely on Hashem, the God of truth. Shar Yoshu, Shar Yaakov El Kelkavir, and then the people will return to Hashem. And so this is the nevuah of that magical scene, you know, with Sancheirav at the gates of Yerushalayim and the siege and the army being destroyed in a day. And then when the people would see that, now a lot of the people were no longer there. A lot of them were sent into exile. A lot of them were killed. But the remnant that was there would see this, and they would stop relying on the Gentiles, and they would stop looking towards them, and they will come back to Hashem. We had this, one of Yeshayahu's sons was named Shar Yashuv. We mentioned that there's the yeshiva called Shar Yashuv. It means whoever is left, Yashuv, will come back. In other words, there will be a time where the people that are left will come back and do teshuvah, and whoever is left of Yaakov, El Kel Kabir, will return to the strong God. Right, we will stop here on verse 21.
Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to torahmediaatlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.